أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. We seek the protection of God from Shaytan, who has been expelled from God's kingdom of special grace and mercy because of his arrogance and his defiance. So if we avoid these satanic habits of arrogance, whatever we know to be true, we submit. What we know to be true by our God-given aql, by the guidance of the Sharia, and by our inner conscience. And whatever we know to be evil, we avoid the satanic habit of defiance, and therefore we avoid doing it. What we know to be evil by our God-given intellect, by the guidance of the Sharia, and by our inner conscience. And then if we have reliance on God, we shall be granted the strength to be able to identify, to oppose, and to overcome satanic temptations. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We humbly turn to God and ask for His special grace and guidance, because He is the All-Perfect One. Nobody can achieve any perfection or goodness until and unless Allah wills it so. And we turn to Him because He is Rahman. His mercy, His love, His care, His attention spans out to reach each and everything, brings it to life, sustains it, enables it to reach its goal of perfection. And we turn to Him because He is Rahim. His extra grace and love, which is abundant, which is eternal, which is unimaginable, is available as support here in the dunya and as reward in the akhirah. But it's exclusive for those who believe in Him and who respond to His will and who live by His dictates and who are ready to die for it. Alhamdulillah. Wassalatu wassalam ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin. And we send our salutations and greetings and our expression of love and loyalty to the Holy Prophet and to his holy progeny, who are the best guides for mankind till the end of time. Respected scholars, elders, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Tonight we commemorate the memory of the eldest son of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Ali al-Akbar. The identity of some individuals unfortunately remains hidden, except for specific circumstances where they are allowed to glow and allowed to show themselves. We don't have much details about his life, but the little details we have are quite inspiring and revealing. For example, the battle cry. When he goes to the battlefield, he's proud to announce himself to be Ali, the son of Hussein, the son of Ali. But then he says, we will never be ruled by the corrupt, incompetent, deviant leaders. نحن وبيت الله أولى بالنبي. We are the more deserving and the more righteous as the God-appointed leaders, not these corrupt, deviant leaders. وَاللَّهِ لَا يَحْكُمُ فِينَا إِبْنُ الدَّعِي. I swear by God that will not rule over us these illegitimate, both by birth and by the manner in which they have grabbed power and they exercise their power over the ummah. And therefore, notice the boldness and the assertion with which they declare the leaders to be illegitimate. Yazid is known to be openly incompetent, openly sinful, not only by Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, but even the general Sahaba and the general members of the Ummah at that time. In fact, even members of the Bani Umayyah, in fact, even supporters of Bani Umayyah knew about it. It was a public secret, if at all it was a secret. And therefore, it's important for us, as we declare our loyalty and we mourn and weep for Ali Akbar, and we will declare that قلبي لقلبكم سلم وأمري لأمركم متبع, And we will say that Nusrati lakum mu'adda, my heart is in submission and in consonance and loyalty to your cause. And then I am ready to join you, and I declare my loyalty. And ma'akum ma'akum la ma'a aduwikum, I am with you and not with your enemy. So we need to identify the qualities of the enemy, and we need to distance ourselves from those qualities. So very briefly, let me share with you what is the public secret about Yazid. Yazid's mother was a Christian, Maysun. When she was pregnant with Yazid, Muawiyah divorces her. Yazid is delivered out in the tribal areas away from Damascus. He is brought up in a non-Islamic environment. In fact, one of the things he begins to love right from early on is drinking. And for some reason, he turns out to be a very good poet. Apparently, he must have been trained in good poetry. So, for example, he praises drinking. In Harumat Yawman Ala Dini Ahmada, فَخُذْهَا عَلَى دِينِ الْمَسِيحِ بْنِ مَرْيَمَا. Well, if alcohol is prohibited in the deen of Ahmed, but in the deen of Isa, son of Mary, it is legitimate to drink. Again, that's a distortion. According to our traditions from the Imams alayhimus salam, there is no faith and no religion but that alcohol is going to be prohibited in that faith. The sixth old Imam says, مَا بَعْثَ اللَّهُ نَبِيًّا قَطْ. There is never ever a prophet sent to a community illa wa fi ilmi Allahi azza wa jal, but that it is decreed finally that idha akmala lahu deenahu, when the teachings will be gradually promulgated and propagated and declared and all the teachings will be delivered, that finally kana fihi tahrimul khamr, definitely there will be prohibition of alcohol. It's logically impossible for the deen of God to address the human being and the intellect of the human being and then not to warn him about the very dangers that his intellect faces from certain lifestyle habits, for example drinking. So when he comes to power with his background, drinking is something which is prevalent. The court, Yazidi court, was even penetrated by, unfortunately, non-Muslims. They were in proximity. Damascus is in proximity to the Byzantine Empire. And he had advisors in a very close councils from these non-Muslims who were into drinking and into music. For example, Sarjaun, who was his advisor about the message that should be sent to Ibn Ziyad about how he should treat Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And Sir John claims that I've got a message from Muawiyah before he died. You weren't there in town, but I got this message from him. Or the Christian poet Akhbal praises sinful lifestyle, drinking, music. Muawiyah, in order to establish credibility for Yazid, he creates a scenario where Yazid is supposed to go for jihad and he is supposed to lead jihad and then come back with medals of honor and victory. They go to the battlefield. Unfortunately, the army is afflicted by an epidemic. They develop fever and pustules. Yazid says, "Ma in ubali bima laqat jumu'uhum." It doesn't bother me what has happened to the army. Bil ghaz. I don't care what has happened to them, so long as Umm Kulthum is with me. That was his lover on that trip. Mas'udi, the historian, says that during Yazid's time, during Bani Umayyah time, this debauchery and this indulgence spread to the point that even the holiest of the cities, Medina and Mecca, music was being played. Musical instruments were being used for composing and playing music. After the event of Karbala, when Ibn Ziyad is invited to Damascus, Adi. Bring and serve, fill the cup, so let my spirits enjoy drinking. And then serve it to Ibn Ziyad for the celebration of the victory. In other words, let the wine and the music flow. And this was so shocking that after Karbala, when some of the Sahaba or the next generation after the Sahaba, they visit Damascus and they see openly, blatantly, defiantly the violation of the basics of the Sharia, they come back and say, when they came back to Medina, they said, قَدِمْنَا مِنْ عِنْدِ رَجُلٍ لَيْسَ لَهُ دِينٍ. This man is not even a Muslim. He is not practicing at all. يَشْرِبُ الْخَمْرَ يَضْرِبُ بِالطَّنَابِيرِ. Musical instruments are being used. He drinks freely. يُعِزَفْ عِنْدَهُ الْقِيَانِ. Singers are invited and they sing. يَلْعَبْ بِالْكِلَابِ. He plays around with animals, monkeys and dogs. خِفْنَا. We had خَوْف and fear. أَنُّرْمَ بِالْحِجَارَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ. We were afraid any moment punishment would come down on us at the time period when we were with him. يَنْكِحُ الْأُمَّهَاتِ وَالْبَنَاتِ وَالْأَخَوَاتِ. He's free in his sexual behavior. يَدَعُ الصَّلَاةِ. If there's anything missing, there's no salah in that court. Or his indulgence in music. He tells the singers, مَعْشَرَ النَّدْمَانِ قُومُ. Courtiers, rise up, start, let the music flow. وَاسْمَعُوا صَوْتَ الْأَغَانِي وَاتْرُكُوا ذِكْرَ الْمَعَانِي شَغَلَتْنِي نَغْمَةُ الْعِيدَانِي عَنْ صَوْتِ الْأَذَانِي تَعَوَّضْتُ عَنِ الْحُورِ خُمُورًا فِي الدِّنَانِي. Does the courtiers rise and let the music and the wine flow? Let's listen to it. Forget these messages, the spiritual messages. The listening to the melody and the tunes, they have preoccupied my mind. I have no time to listen to the azan. And what are these promises about hurul ain and the pleasure that I derived here in the dunya? That's enough for me. Notice the behavior of this man, the attitude of this man, the open defiance. It has certain lifestyles that were sinful that led him to this situation, and one of them is music. I've been requested to clarify this issue of music, and that's why I've focused and emphasized this particular aspect of the lifestyle of Yazid. A very quick clarification. Our mujtahids, for example, Hazrat Ayatollah Sistani, may Allah protect him, they say music is of two types. There is the permissible type and then there is the prohibited type. And music which is permissible, he says, and this you can find in the code of Muslim Islamic practice for Muslims in the West, Masala number 536. He says music which is permissible is the music which does not entail entertainment in gatherings which are held for that purpose, and vice versa. The forbidden music is a music which is suitable for entertainment and for amusement gatherings. That's the technical definition. And then 538, he says it's permissible to visit places where halal music is being played, and it's permissible to listen to halal music. But if there's a public place where haram music is being played, for example, passengers' concourse or waiting areas for visitors or public parks or restaurants or cafes, and even if haram music is played, it's still halal to visit that place, provided you don't intentionally wish and plan to listen to it, and you're just hearing it as something in the background that you don't pay attention to. There was a companion who came to the sixth old imam. He says that I have a neighbor and in my one part of my house, when I go to that room, I can overhear what's happening across the wall, and he's got a singer and she sings and I can hear her, but sometimes I need to visit that room, it's necessary, so I listen to the music. Is something wrong with that? And Imam alayhi salam says, no, you are responsible. Inna sam'a wal basara wal fu'ada. Imam alayhi salam then invokes this ayah of the Quran that the eyes and the ears and the heart, kullu ula'ika kana anhu mas'ula, you will be held responsible for what you see and hear and you think about if you deliberately seek it. But if you're caught in a situation where it's not planned and therefore you don't pay attention to it, you're busy in the purpose for which you're visiting that place, then you won't be held responsible. And masala number 540, he says it's permissible for adults as well as for children to learn music, the art of halal music, which is taught, let's say, in the schools or in other places, so long as it doesn't have, visiting such places doesn't have any negative effect on the upbringing of the children. And finally, masala number 542, he says it's not permissible, however, to recite the Holy Quran or the Marthiya or the Nawha or the Du'as or the Qasida in a tune which is commensurate and corresponds to the halal, to the haram tune. In fact, elsewhere he says it becomes doubly haram, because number one, you have adopted the haram tune, and number two, you have disrespected the sacred message contained in the Quran or the Hadith or the Dua or the Marthiya or the Qasida or the Nawha. You've disrespected and desecrated it by rendering it in the haram tune. The one music which is allowed as an exception is singing amongst the females in wedding celebrations, but provided no haram musical instruments are used, number one, and provided no haram lyrics are used, number two, and provided there is no haram mixing of males and females such that the males listen to the excitatory voice of the female song, number three. Yet despite all this, some mujtahids allow it. Abu Sistani says ihtiyat wajib, no, even that should be avoided. So the big question is, what is this rule about music and what is the basis of it? In the Quran, in Surah Luqman, chapter 31, ayah number 6, Allah describes the prohibition of music in the most detailed manner in any verse in the Quran. وَمِنَ النَّاسِ, Allah says, and amongst the people there are some, مَنْ يَشْتَرِي لَهْوَ الْحَدِيثِ, there are some who come and purchase and procure diversionary, distracting discourse. It's a broad term that can include stories, narrations, novels, magazines, music. The riwaya interprets this to include music. وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَشْتَرِي لَهْوَ الْحَدِيثِ لِيُضِلَّ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ, so that he may divert and deviate people and the listeners away from the path of God, from the message of God. بِغَيْرِ عِلْمٍ, and the message is not based on any strong logical philosophical foundation. وَيَتَّخِذَهَا هُزُوًا, in fact he takes the message of the Quran and the religious message, he takes it as a joke, he mocks at it, he jests with it. Notice what Yazid did. Nadr bin Harith, it is said that he used to visit and cross over into the Persian Empire and bring back from them the legends and the myths of Rustam and Isfandiyar and the stories of the Shahs. And then he would come and narrate. He says, why are you listening to the Quran? The story of Ad and Thamud and all the prophets. Let me give you a more interesting story. And he would give them the alternative. And this ayah was revealed to say that don't listen to these which are untrue. In fact, they will deviate you from the straight path. In fact, they'll make you mock at the faith. In fact, they have no foundation. So he said, what is the prophet, what are they promising? They're promising you the fire of hell and the tree of Zakum. Zakum is a tree which is described in the Quran. Inna shajarata zakumi ta'amul athim. The sinful will be forced to eat from the tree of Zakum, which is in the center of hell, which is spiny, which is thorny, which is obnoxious in its taste, which is bitter in its taste, which is painful. So it's a description of punishment. It'll be in the center of the fire, burning fire, unbearable fire, not very far off, very sticky fire, fire which will keep on burning permanently, and every time the skin, the pain sensitive skin, when it gets burnt, a new skin will be built, the Quran says. It'll be refreshed all the time. In fact, no, you will not only burn from without to within, you will even burn from within to without. With all this description, no. You know what the zakum is? And he prepares some sweet dish of dates and butter and he presents that. This is the zakum which the Prophet is talking about. Mocking at the faith. And this is exactly what Yazid also was doing. After the music, he says that, well, what is this adhan? What is this hur? This pleasure, the wine and the women and the music, this is the pleasure which is the true pleasure. You reach a point where truth is no longer important for you. The imaginary world is more important. In fact, you begin to object. You begin to reject. No, you begin to disgrace and disrespect the truth. That's the ultimate end result of the music which is mentioned in the Quran. In the next ayah, Allah then continues by saying that the end result is these people, when they are now given the right message, they pretend as if they never heard it. وَإِذَا تُتْلَى عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتُنَا وَلَّا مُسْتَكْبِرًا. When our signs of truth, which should awaken them, when they are recited onto them, they turn their face away. They don't want to listen. In fact, they turn away arrogantly, not humbly, not submissively, in a mood of rejection and opposition. كَأَلَّمْ يَسْمَعْهَا. They behave as if they never heard the message. No, worse than that. كَأَنَّ فِي أُذُنَيْهِ وَقْرًا. It's as if their ears are hard of hearing. They're almost deaf. They're not deaf. It's the sinfulness which has deafened them. It's the music which has deafened the spiritual ears. فَبَشِّرْهُ بِعَذَابٍ أَلِيمٍ. For them, promise them a punishment which is painful, and the previous ayah says عذاب بن مهين, a punishment which is disgracing and humiliating. You degrade the truth. When the truth will appear on the day of judgment, you will be degraded. A punishment which is degrading. Question. So what is it about music which is so harmful and which is so dangerous? In the riwayat, we're told about the effects of music, but before I talk about them, let me just briefly share with you some of the reasons why music could be haram. One, of course, is the effect that the lyrics has on the listener. Number two is the effect that the beat and the rhythm and the melody has on the listener. Number three, of course, is the musical instruments. And number four are the musicians themselves as role models. Musicians. Because music tends to attract the individual, they tend to look up to the musicians as heroes who have to be emulated. I like to give this example, but I'm sure in modern times there may be worst examples. Madonna, back in the 80s and the 90s, she was one of the biggest music stars. She's not faded away, she's still there. And she came on the scene in the mid-80s, but she attracted the teens and the pre-teens, projecting an image of an innocent girl with suggestive behaviors and projecting an image, a positive religious image. The album release was The Virgin, which had got nothing to do with Mary the Virgin, of course. And she had a particular dress code where the underwear becomes the outerwear, and the particular hairstyle and lacy dress and the movements and the gyrations of the body and the smile and the movement of the tongue. I'm sorry, I can't describe everything. And she was admired. She was admired as the liberator, as a crusader for liberating women from oppression. So one problem with music is the unconscious effect it has on us by attracting us to admire the musician who turned out to be evil role models. The second problem with music is the melody, the rhythm, the beat itself. The musicians themselves say that the sounds, the rhythm and the beat, and the lighting effects in the concerts especially, they have powerful effects on the viewers and the listeners. No, not powerful, simple effects. Powerful indoctrinating effects. The musician is quoted to say, "I realized that the music got through to the listener. The beats of the music, they matched the body rhythms. And there was nothing anyone could do to knock out that rhythm once it entered the mind. It kept on playing. The jingles were there. And we knew it," the musician said, "that once the rhythm got across, it was in their mind, it was accepted, it stayed with them till the end of their lives. They kept on singing it at the back of their mind." The melodies are powerful. The rhythms are powerful. In addition to the melody, not only the musicians, also those accompanying players in the whole music band, they also have an effect, unfortunately. A group of psychologists were interviewed about musicians as their clients, and they said that if you were to talk to these psychologists, and they would tell you that they have a common pattern, these musicians. The pattern is their desire for immediate gratification and satisfaction and self-fulfillment. Indulgence, basically, in animal desires. Musicians, they crave for money, for power, for control. Their fantasy is to live a life of luxury, of plenty of wealth. And they want to get the maximum joy, and they're ready to die young, even if it's worth getting all the pleasures. And they know it is going to damage their health. Doesn't matter. So, he said, these psychologists say, look at their obituaries, these musicians. Many of them, they die from these indulgences. Alcoholism, drug abuse, accidents. You know, the riwayah says, Al-ghina sharru ma khalaqallah. Al-ghina akhbath ma khalaqallah. The most khabith and the most evil of what Allah has created is music. The way it's personified by the musicians' lifestyles. The lyrics, you'll have to excuse me. It's not worthy of quoting. This lectern and this platform cannot be used for quoting such base material. Alan Bloom is a sociologist, a philosopher, American. He has written a book, The Closing of the American Mind. He talks about some of the cheap media entertainment which have led to the degradation of the American thinking, especially the young generation. And he talks about rock music, for example. He says rock music reduces parental control on moral education. The young generation, according to Bloom, they don't listen to the music only. They live that music. They wake up to it. They get ready to go to school by it. They go to school with it. In the school, when they get the chance, they listen to it. They'll do their homework listening to it. They'll spend time, hours listening to it. They go to sleep with it. They live that music. Not, they don't only listen to it, they live it. And they take the attitudes and the habits and the behavior. Worst. Alan Bloom says that rock music has one big problem. No, it has an appeal, which I say is a problem. The appeal of rock music is the barbaric appeal to sexual desires, not to love, not to love sharing and commitment and responsibility and sacrifice. That's true love. No. When they talk about love in rock music, they're talking about animal desires. Untutored, undeveloped sexual desires. What the riwayah tells us, that al-ghina yunbitu an-nifaq fil qalb kama yunbitu al-ma' al-baqal, just like water leads to the growth of plants, so also music leads to the growth of nifaq in the heart and weakness of the faith, and gradually erosion of the faith and then elimination of the faith, whereby you no longer feel like doing good things, you get more attracted to evil things. In fact, when you're invited to good things, you're not ready to respond till you reach a point where evil and good is the same. You reach a point where good becomes evil and evil becomes good. Music is a powerful tool that does that. Hendrix, a musician, you can hypnotize people with music, he says. And when you get them, once they're hypnotized, they're weakened. And once they're at their weakest point, you can preach into their subconscious what you want, the garbage that they have in their lyrics. The secret power of music. David Tame says that the precise nature of any musical work is the emotional state of the composer and the performer. What does music do? The composer enters into a particular mental emotional state and expresses himself in the lyrics. Through the tools of the musical instruments and the melody and the tune and the rhythm, he then lowers the inhibition of the listener and the viewer. Once the listener is responsive and weak, the lyrics are transferred. In essence, this emotional mental state of the musician through the power of the music enters the listener, and it tends to mold us and shape our consciousness according to itself, according to the composers. In other words, through music, parts of the musician's soul becomes part of the consciousness assimilated by the listener and the viewer. The riwayah says, "Man asgha ila natiqin faqad abada." Whosoever listens to a powerful speaker, it's as if he has worshipped him. "Fa'in nataqa ani Allah faqad abada Allah, wa in nataqa ani shaytan faqad abada shaytan." Depends on the speaker now. If he's speaking to you on with the messages from God, you have the message of God entering your unconscious. When he's talking to you about the message from the devil, you become part of the devil's follower. And music is one of those powerful tools. So what are the messages? I won't read the lyrics, but I'll give you the message in decent terms. Because the youth are eager to learn, and because the youth are open-minded, but unfortunately their power of distinction and discernment of what's good and bad has not yet been perfected and matured enough, they become susceptible, they're vulnerable. So, kid, go ahead in life. Anything, if you feel it's right, go ahead and do it. If it feels good, do it. Don't worry in the world about anyone but yourself. Not the teacher, not the preacher, not the government, not the police, not your parents. It's you who has to decide what's good for you. Have a good time. Have a good time. Anytime, every time, with anyone, with everyone. But be careful, don't catch anything. So that's a free license now of promiscuity. The appeal to the youth. So the teens are told, "Teenager, I know you're confused. I know you're growing up and you've got questions in your mind. Come with me. I have answers for you. I can guide you." And if anyone thinks that they are smart, that they are strong, that they have the power of distinction and discernment, that they can control and they can listen but not be affected, they're fooling themselves. Psychologists, sociologists have done studies about the effect of media on the viewers. Oh, now we're living in an MTV world. It's not only music, listening to music, it's watching music now. The power of the media has been studied by psychologists. And the analysis that was done by psychologists was that the majority of these musical pieces, unfortunately, contain a violence, message about violence, about teenage drugs, about sex. Let me share with you a couple of these studies. Dennis Kendrick and Sara Gutierrez. They did a study on university students. So they took a photograph and they said that, you know, we have a new friend who's come on the campus and we're looking for a date for this person. We found this female, this girl. What do you think about her? But what the researchers did is, before they asked the interviewees, they allowed them to watch programs, two types of programs. Programs where they had very attractive females in musical shows. And then they were asked this question. Those who were exposed to the attractive female models in the shows that they watched, when they looked at this average attractive female, they downplayed her suitability. Those who watched an ordinary neutral program, they rated her as average good. Whether you want it or not, whether you like it or not, you're going to watch these shows, and music is a powerful tool that can penetrate right to your unconscious. Unconsciously, you will make decisions whereby, for example, your own partner who is attractive will no longer seem to be as attractive. Number one. Number two, so she's not attractive for me anymore. Number two, the second effect is the other one is more attractive. The grass is greener on the other side of the lawn. The other one seems to be more attractive. Mackenzie Moore and Mark Zanna, they conducted a study, two groups of students. One group of students was shown a political debate. The other group was shown MTV. And then a female research subject was sent to interview them. The interview was a decoy. Once the interview was over, the students were asked several questions about the interview. Finally, the question was asked, how would you rate the woman who came to interview you? It's not difficult to imagine how did they see that woman, the interviewer, after they had watched those two different types of programs. Those who watched the political debates saw her as an ordinary person. The one who had watched the MTV thought that this interviewer was a sexually attractive, available, inviting person. Whether you like it or not, it preps you up. Music penetrates to the mind, to the heart, affects the emotions, even if you deny it. Number three, well, not only does it make your own partner less attractive, not only does it make others look more attractive, it makes others look even more available. The MTV programs, when they were shown, and when these viewers were then interviewed, they turned out to be more accepting of use of aggression in sexual relationships versus those who were not exposed to this. And number four, and finally, so not only your one partner is less attractive, not only the other one is more attractive, no, everyone is more available now. No, not only are they available, it's all right to use force to get them. Zilman, he showed these programs to these students, and then when they were interviewed, they were shown a news report, somebody was caught in a crime of rape, and then these viewers were asked, how would you, if you were a member of the juror, what would your decision be in favor of the punishment that should be given to this rapist? And their punishment to the rapist was turned out to be lesser compared to the others. They were in interviews more ready and more willing to accept extramarital affairs. They were ready to accept the seduction of a 12-year-old. So not only everyone becomes available, you can use force to overpower them. Even if they are minors, they're still your victims. Everybody becomes available now. So those of us who think music, the forbidden one, the prohibited one, I'm smart, I'm strong, I can control myself, I won't be influenced. Psychological studies show unconsciously, whether you like it or not, you are being affected. It's only a matter of time before it's going to show itself. In one of the riwayat, the Imam alayhi salam is asked, Remember, Makkah and Medina, musical instruments were becoming prevalent. So in Medina, Imam Alayhi Salam is asked about certain musical instruments and about music. And Imam Alayhi Salam responds by saying, إِنَّ الْمُؤْمِنَ لَفِي شُغُلٍ عَنْ جَمِيعِ ذَلِكَ. A mu'min is too preoccupied, he's too noble, he's too elevated and exalted to stoop down so low in lifestyles which are promoting vice and which are promoting these evil behaviors. In fact, when the Imam is asked about lahu, Imam responds by saying, do you know God does not play? And Imam alayhi salam quotes this ayah from Surah Anbiya, which is chapter 21, ayah number 16, 17 and 18, where Allah is introduced as a person who, and as a being who does not play. And therefore a mu'min who is a reflection of God's good qualities should not play in these entertainment and amusement which are damaging and harmful. وَمَا خَلَقْنَا السَّمَاءَ وَالْأَرْضَ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا لَاعِبِينَ. And we have not created the heavens and the earth and whatever is between them for a play. Life is purposeful. Even death is purposeful for that matter. Creation isn't a game. The smallest of the creation and the biggest of the creation, everything has a wisdom. Oh, ask the scientists and they don't even know all the details of the greatest of the creations, the galaxies and the super galaxies, and they don't even know the secrets of creation, even of the smallest. They don't know subatomic particles, all of them. Everything has been created for a purpose, not for a play. لو أردنا, and in case you think if we wanted to play, Allah says, لو أردنا أن نتخذ لهوا, if we wanted to play a game, لَاتَّخَذْنَاهُ مِنْ لَدُنَّا إِنَّا إِنْ كُنَّا فَاعِلِينَ. We would have played a game appropriate to us, not in the material world, up in the angelic world. And besides, if life was a game, then why send all these instructions, do's and don'ts? Let everyone do whatever they want. Why send messengers who had to suffer all this? Why have Karbala? Why have the son of Imam Hussein sacrificed? Oh, this is not a game. Life is not a game. A mu'min is not the one who engages in low, indulgent, evil lifestyles. In fact, Imam alayhi salam then continues in the next ayah, ayah number 18, in the same surah, where Allah says, بَلْ نَقْذِفُ بِالْحَقِّ عَلَى الْبَاطِلِ. In fact, we hurl, just like a stone, the truth on the falsehood, on the batil. فَيَدْمَغُهُ. This batil will be crushed by this haq. فَإِذَا هُوَ زَاهِق. And then you see batil will disappear. Batil is just a facade. It's an appearance. Evil, if it has power, it's just temporary. It's superficial. It has to be opposed. And once it is opposed with the truth, the very foundations of the universe, this physical world is a small minuscule of the grand universe, which is non-physical. The whole of the rest of the universe is based on the truth. All the laws that govern the physical universe are based on the truth. There's some who are evil, misusing, abusing their power, temporarily being allowed to do so as a test from God. It's a matter of time before those who seek the truth find it, live by it, and are ready to fight for it, oppose the evil, and you'll see the evil empire crumble. فَإِذَا هُوَ زَاهِق. You will see it vanish, the evil. وَيْلٌ وَلَكُمُ الْوَيْلُ مِمَّا تَصِفُونَ. Woe be to you what you describe to God. God is playing games? This is how you describe God? And therefore a mu'min is the one who is engaging in these lowly, indulgent, evil lifestyles? Woe be to you if this is how you understand. And therefore, for us, the example of Ali Akbar is a unique example. 18-year-old young man, or according to some traditions, he was born during the time of the Uthmani Khilafah, so that was somewhere around 35 AH or before that. So he must have been around 25 plus minimum when he was in Karbala, if he was born during the Khilafat of Uthman. The amazing thing about Ali Akbar is his conviction that he displays in one of the stations on the movement between Makkah and Kufa, and before they come to Karbala, there's a place known as Tha'labiyya. Imam alayhi salam receives the news about the martyrdom of Muslim and Hani there. But history also says at that point Imam alayhi salam had a short slumber, asleep. And then he woke up and he was crying. So Ali Akbar saw this and he asked the Imam alayhi salam, "Ma laka tabki ya abati?" My dear father, how come I see you crying? La abkallah aynaka. May Allah not make you cry. Imam Hussein crying, it's a bit strange. Obviously he wouldn't be crying for himself. He explains to his son, "Ya bunayya, innaha sa'atun la tukzab fiha ar-ru'ya." This hour, it was the Dhuhr time, just before Dhuhr. This is the time when nobody sees a dream but that dream is true. Irrespective of the time, for the ma'asum, a dream will always be true. Ra'aytu farisan, I was taken over by sleep, and then I saw a horseman, and he's following us, and he's addressing me, and he's telling me, "Ya Hussein, innakum tasra'una al-masir." You seem to be moving very fast on this journey. "Wal manaya bikum tasra'u ila al-jannah." And death is also chasing you, but death is the means to enable you to reach Jannah. When I heard this in my dream, "Alimtu anna anfusana nu'iyat ilayna," I knew death is very near for us. So he woke up crying. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam is crying not because he's fearful, not because he is afraid of suffering death. This is the same man who in Makkah declared that whosoever is ready to donate his blood and his life in the way of God, let him join us. This is a brave man who went into the palace of Walid bin Utbah bin Abi Sufyan and challenged them. He couldn't be afraid of death. This is the man who addresses Hur and his army, and he addresses the army at Karbala, and he says, "Inni la ara al-maut illa sa'ada wal hayat ma'a al-zalimina illa barama." I see life with this ignominy of subjecting myself to the evil dictator. This life is worse for me. Death with dignity is much preferable. He's not afraid of death. So if he's crying, there must be some other reason. Well, maybe he's crying because of the loss and the pain and the suffering that the family will undergo. Or maybe he's crying because of the loss that the Muslims will undergo. The pathetic situation of the Muslims, that they are being subjugated to an evil dictator and there's nobody to help them. The loss that Islam is suffering, maybe that would be the plausible reason for Imam to cry, not for his own fear of death. And this is reflected in his son. Ali Akbar says, "Awalasna ala al-haq." Death is coming to us, but are we not on the right path? Haven't we identified what is true and false? Haven't we determined ourselves that the consequence of our decision is that we're going to be killed? Aren't we sure that what we have decided is true? "Bala ya bunayya wallazi ilayhi marja'ul ibad." I swear by the one to whom all of us will go back to, our decision is correct. So Ali Akbar then he says, "Idhan la nubali bil maut." So we're not concerned about death, whether we reach death or death reaches us. So long as we're on the straight path, on the right path, we shouldn't be worried. Jazakallah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, "May Allah bless you and reward you." "Anni ya bunayya khayra ma jaza bihi waladan an walidihi." The best reward that any son is to get from a father. I would like to compare another son and a father in which there was a sacrifice. A son and a father, because Imam Hussein alayhi salam is very proud, he introduces Ali Akbar on the day of Ashura. When Ali Akbar is going to the battlefield, Imam alayhi salam recites an ayah from the Quran. "Inna Allah astafa Adama wa Nuhan wa ala Ibrahima wa ala Imrana ala al-alamin." Surah Ala Imran, chapter 3, ayah 33. And ayah 34 says, "Dhurriyatan ba'duha min ba'd wallahu sami'un alim." When Ali Akbar is going to the battlefield, Imam alayhi salam says, Allah has chosen amongst the whole of mankind some people to be elevated over others. He has chosen Adam. Oh, the first man on the earth was a chosen man. He wasn't an evolutionary animal who transmogrified from a monkey to a human. No. The first man was a holy man. "Wa Nuhan," And when there was a global flood and mankind had to be restarted, the second Adam, chosen man, Noah. And then the father of all the Abrahamic faiths, the monotheistic faiths, Ibrahim, chosen. Wa ala Imrana, Maryam and her son. All these are chosen people. Allah knows the inner secrets because He's Sami' and He's Alim. He listens to the inner thoughts. He knows the inner motives. He knows the purity. He knows the submission. He knows the virtue. He knows the ismah. He knows how they would fare were they to be tested in the most difficult of all circumstances. And therefore they're elevated as a reward. This man and this young man who is going to the battlefield is not an ordinary man. He's the son from a generation right from Adam to Nuh to Ibrahim to Isa of holy ones. According to some scholars, Ali Akbar was almost a ma'soom, not the ma'soom that the a'imma had, but the isma, for example, that Hazrat Abbas had, or the isma that Bibi Zainab had. The comparison I would like to make, therefore, based on this ayah which Imam Hussein alayhi salam recites on the departure of Ali Akbar, is the comparison with Prophet Ibrahim and Ismail, because there's a sacrifice in both the cases. And incidentally, there's a dream involved also, just the way there was a dream here, which Imam Hussein reports to Ali Akbar. Ibrahim alayhi salam, in Surah Safat, chapter 37, ayah 99 onwards, Allah says, وَقَالَ إِنِّي ذَاهِبٌ إِلَىٰ رَبِّي سَيَهْدِينِي. I'm facing a society which is full of evil. I can't resist, I can't change, so I'm migrating. I'm migrating to my Lord. Where am I migrating to? Any particular place? No. Any place where I can worship my Lord, that's where I'm going to. Exactly what Imam Hussein and his family did. Rabbi Habli, I'm leaving everything behind, but Rabbi Habli min as-salihin. Oh Allah, gift me, give me a child, give me children. Children who are going to be virtuous. To pray for children, and children as gifts, and that also that they should be virtuous. Or not that they should be intelligent and pretty and handsome. No, these are secondary issues. If given, alhamdulillah. If no, doesn't matter. What's more important? Salihin. They should be virtuous. Fabasharnahu. And we gave him the good tidings, Ibrahim. Bighulamin, a young man. Halim. Very persevering and firm and determined. We will see his determination very soon. Ghulam. The same ghulam, Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, oh Allah, be a witness, there's a ghulam going to the battlefield. Ashbahu an-nas bi nabiyyika khalqan wa khulqan wa mantiqa. Falamma balagha ma'ahu as-sa'ya, ayah number 102 says, when this young boy grew up to a level of maturity, physical maturity, mental maturity, emotional maturity, social maturity, he was mature now. Qala ya bunayya, my son, shut up and sleep down, I gotta chop your head off. I've got a decision to make in life. I'm going to discuss it with you. Look at how a father discusses with his teenage son. He's mature now. Give him the respect. Discuss with him. My son, I want to seek your opinion. Inni ara fil manami, I've seen a dream, not once, twice, several times. It keeps on repeating itself. Anni azbahuka, I'm slaughtering you. That's my dream. Fanzur madha tara, tell me what is your opinion and your view about this. Excuse me, my dear father, I think, you know, you are... Hey, dreams, who, you can't trust dreams. Dreams are from, sometimes they're from Satan. Dreams, what are you being asked to do in a dream? To come and slaughter someone? You can't kill a son? That's atrocious, father. You must revise your view about your dream. And what? The dream is ordering you? Order, you know, orders are of two types. There's wajib order, there's mustahab order, and then there is makruh, and then there is ihtiyat wajib. How do you know this is a wajib order? And besides, if it's wajib, it's not dhuhr now, it becomes qaza at maghrib. We've got hours, why do you want to do it now? He could have said any of these things to deflect. But look at the answer of the young man. The man says, Ya Abati, my dear father, if al ma tu'mar, go ahead, whatever you've seen in your dream, I trust you. You're a wise man, you're a God-fearing man, you're a truth-seeking and truth-submitting man. You cannot be fooled by Shaitan. If it's a dream, it's a dream and a vision and a message from God. It's a message for sacrifice, I accept it. If Allah has asked us to do it, it's the best for my interest and your interest. If Alma to Umar, go ahead. But it's difficult. You're going to lose me, I'm going to lose you. And therefore we need sabr. Satajiduni min as-sabirin. You will find me amongst those who make sabr. Insha'Allah min as-sabirin. I don't have enough strength. I will muster all my courage, but I need help from God to have the sabr. Precisely the same sacrifice. Now come to Karbala. Of course, in the case of Ibrahim, the sacrifice does not go ahead because Ibrahim is told, Ya Ibrahim, qad sadaqta ru'ya. You have been tested by the dream to see, are you ready to give away? And Ismail, is he ready to give in? Both of you have passed the test. But in Karbala, it was different. Ali Akbar comes and seeks permission. فَاسْتَأْذَنَ أَبَاهُ. Oh, dear father, I ask you permission to go to the battlefield. Imam Hussein doesn't say, wait, my dear son, you are my dream of the future. You are so young, you're so energetic, you will be good for Islam later on. Let me die, you will remain alive. You're the one who's going to spread the message. No, the moment the question is asked, immediately he says, go ahead. This is Hussein's bravery, this is Hussein's sacrifice, this is his contribution for Islam. The moment permission was sought, immediately granted. Allahumma ishhad. He makes a dua. Allahumma ishhad ala ha'ula'i al-qawm. Faqad baraza ilayhim ghulamun ashbahu an-nas binabiyyika khalqan wa khulqan wa mantiqa. Oh Lord, be a witness to the depravity of these people. To him is now going a young man who is the most resembling to your prophet in appearance, in character, in his thoughts. You know, we don't have in history somebody who resembles the prophet as totally as this. The Holy Lady Fatima, we are told, she resembled the prophet in his gait. Imam Hassan alayhi salam resembled the Holy Prophet in his haybah and his awesome character. Imam Hussein alayhi salam resembled the Holy Prophet in his bravery, in his generosity. But somebody resembles the Prophet in character? No, in his appearance. No, in his the manner in which he speaks. Kunna idha ishtaqna an nanzura ila nabiyyika. Whenever we wanted to see the Prophet, we would nazarna ila wajhihi. We would look at this young man. And now this people, they have stooped so low that they don't even respect the Prophet. And somebody who resembles and represents the Prophet. Ali Akbar enters the battlefield and his battle cry, Ana Ali ibn al-Husayn ibn Ali, nahnu wa baytillahi awla bin nabi, min zaka shabath wa shimr al-dani, wallahi la yahkumu fina ibn al-da'i, adribukum bis-sayfi ahmi an abi, darba ghulamin hashimiyin alawi. I am Ali, the son of Hussein, the son of Ali. Pride and always honor by Ali ibn Abi Talib. And I swear by God and the God of the Holy House, we are more righteous to be the leaders. How could you be so blind as to come under the dictatorship of this evil despot? Where are you people? Not this Shabath bin Rabai, not this Shimr bin Ziljoshan. Their lifestyles are known. They don't deserve to be leaders. Wallahi, I swear to you with every drop of my blood, we will never allow these illegitimate evil rulers to control us. I will fight against you. I will use my sword till my sword breaks, but I will not break. I will defend my father and what he stands for. Darba ghulamin hashimiyin alawi. If you don't know who the Bani Hashim are, you will see it in my presence and in my fight. But Ali Akbar was no ordinary person. Ali Akbar was the representative of Imam Hussein directly. If there's one man the enemy was going to target with all his force, Ali Akbar. And if there's those few people who have been attacked and chopped up, one of them is Ali Akbar. He fights bravely, and after a little while comes back to the camp. My dear father, Ya Abati, Al-Atashu Qad Qatalani, the thirst is beginning to affect me. وَثِقْلُ الْحَدِيدِ أَجْهَدَنِي, there's a huge mountain of spears and swords against me. Can I have a little water? Not that I can live longer, no. Can I have a little water that I can fight better to protect the truth and to protect you? Imam Hussein alayhi salam looks at Ali Akbar. He says, يَعِزُّ عَلَىٰ مُحَمَّدٍ وَعَلَىٰ عَلِيٍّ وَعَلَىٰ أَبِيكَ أَن تَدْعُوهُمْ فَلَا يُجِيبُونَكَ. It is very difficult for us, oh my dear son. We know you're giving everything you have for the sake of truth, and yet you make a small request and we're so embarrassed we can't give you. But Imam alayhi salam says, just touch my tongue. And Ali Akbar discovers that that tongue is even drier than his own tongue, inasmuch as the tongue of Abbas would have been dry, inasmuch as the tongue of Bibi Zainab would have been dry. I don't know, maybe Ali Akbar later on may have regretted and may have felt embarrassed. How did I make a request from my father, my dear father, my generous father, a request which put him in a position where he couldn't supply it. خُذِ الْخَاتَمِ, Imam Hussein says, I've got a ring, take this ring, fika, put it in your mouth. It seems maybe there are some stones which if they put in the mouth, they could provoke and stimulate some flow of saliva, maybe. Take this ring, put it in your mouth. La tumsi hatta yasqiyaka jadduka. Don't worry. Very soon you shall meet your grandfather and he shall quench your thirst. And this is the best dua in these circumstances for a mu'min. That if you are thirsty, this is the thirst of the body. The body is under the control of the soul. What's more important, Ali Akbar, you should concentrate on the thirst of the soul. That thirst shall be quenched when you meet your grandfather in the barzakh. And he goes back to the battlefield and he fights. But finally he is attacked and he falls to the ground and he cries, Alayka minni salam. My final salam to you, oh my dear father. Imam Hussein alayhi salam rushes to the battlefield. Obviously the attack is massive. Ali Akbar is one of those people whose body has been attacked from all fronts. On his deathbed, he tells Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Hada jaddi, here is my grandfather and he's quenching my thirst. He has fed me and now he awaits you with another cup to quench your thirst. Imam Hussein alayhi salam starts crying. One of the mujtahids, he says, يَبْكِ عَلَيْكَ مُحْتَرِقًا قَلْبُهُ. Imam Hussein's heart must have been burning. لَا تَسْكُنُ مِنْ أَبِيكَ زَفْرًا. Your father's sobbing and sighing and weeping never stopped. لَمَّا أُصِيبَ هَامَةُ الْكَرَامَةُ عَلَىٰ أَبِيهِ قَامَةِ الْقِيَامَةِ. When the strike was made and the blow was struck on the head, the qiyamah for Imam Hussein alayhi salam had risen. This is a pillar of tawheed. This is the backbone of the support for the truth that has now been shaken and fallen. As-salamu ala al-Husayn, wa ala Ali ibn al-Husayn, wa ala awlad al-Husayn, wa ala ashab al-Husayn, jami'an wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Matam al-Husayn. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein.